Welcome back to Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Bus Stop. Tonight is a very special edition of this episode. We are going to talk a little World Series champion Giants. Oh yeah, we're going to talk about the ceremony. We're going to talk about the aftermath of Game 7. We'll talk a little Bumgarner and his status in elites of all time in World Series. And then we'll move on. We'll talk a little, you know, Niners football, if I can handle myself. They're very, very disappointing. And lastly, we'll talk about them 3-0 Golden State Warriors. Yeah, 3-0. And try to make it 4-0 tonight against the LA Clippers. Probably the Warriors' biggest rival at this moment. So let's get, first off, let's start about this Giants Game 7. I was with you for a little bit during this Game 7, but then I moved on back home to the city. I watched the rest of it out there, and it was an amazing, stressful, you know, just something I did never expect. And I never expected Bumgarner to come out of the pen and pitch 5 innings. You know, I thought maybe, possibly, he throws 30, 40 pitches, comes in, throws 2 innings, you know, bridges the gap of maybe the 4th, 5th, and 6th inning to our 7, 8, 9 guys. But you know what? He was dealing. And when you got a guy like that, when you got a starter like that, let him deal. Let him go all day. You know, he didn't look tired. At the end, maybe in the last inning, the last couple hitters, he looked tired. His fastball was dropping in velocity from, it was in the 93, 92, and then he started hitting 89. But he has such movement on his pitches that, you know, he's able to take off speeds and play around. You know, again, he was playing around with his pitches. He threw a slurve, which he usually doesn't have. He throws a 84-mile-an-hour slider. He usually has a hard, tight slider around 86 to 89. And it just has batters fooled. They are completely fooled at what he's throwing, and they can't pick it up from that slingshot angle. You know, he comes from way back and slings it three-quarter arm, and it's just the real deal. I mean, when Bumgarner was first coming up, when he was 19, 20, you know, I went to one of his first, I think I went to his third ever start against the Rockies. He didn't even make it out of the first inning. It was 10-0 by the first inning. And I was, you know, in the beginning, I was like, oh, who is this guy? You know, who's this rookie? Going to be nothing. And it's because they changed his delivery. He was such a dominant pitcher coming up, and then the Giants in the farm system were all, maybe change your delivery, you're putting too much stress on your arm. You know, it's kind of such a unique style of pitching. No one else really has it. So they wanted to make him, you know, more mechanical pitcher, as baseball scouts like to say it. Mechanical, you know. He's got the right mechanics. Everything looks great. You know, but sometimes people don't follow mechanics and do things their own way, and it works out completely well with that. You know, look at the Giants. The Giants are full of players like that. Hunter Pence, he's mechanically, he might be sound, but look how herky-jerky he is when he gets up to play. He takes the weirdest cuts before coming up, you know, the batting practice and all. He's just a very herky-jerky. So then Bumgarner got back into his ways of pitching, pitching with his style, and he really was just became so dominant then, and you saw it the first World Series. He had some relief, a nice start, and then in the second World Series, he's gotten better and better. And then this World Series, oh my God, he was unstoppable. We don't even get close. We don't even make it past the first round if Bumgarner's not with us. You know, he's just a stud, and he's the Giants' hero. He's the MVP. And so now you hear all these things around is who's better, Kershaw or Bumgarner. And it's just such a funny and hard situation to come by, because, you know, Kershaw is going to win the MVP and the MVP. He's going to win the Cy Young. But Bum is just going to be sitting there smiling because he's got the one thing that matters, the ring. And he's got 3 of those. And Kershaw's got none. Never got past the DS round. So, I mean, what do you look at when you're judging this? Who do you start your new, if you can start a new franchise today, who would you start with? I mean, it's definitely a very tight race. Most people would say Kershaw. I probably am going to say Bumgarner because I'm a fan. I'm a hometown. But, you know, you see what pitchers are made of after they've thrown a bunch, over 200 innings, you know, throwing a bunch of hitters. And then they go into the playoffs, and then this is really where they're supposed to shine. This is where they're supposed to pick it up after a long season. And a lot of pitchers are not able to do that. They're not able to fully comprehend how tough it is to pitch in the playoffs. And you see Kershaw, he was dominant at times during the playoffs, but it wasn't as dominant as you saw in the regular season. He didn't go like 9 shutout consistently, 8 shutout consistently like he did every time against the Giants whenever we faced. I think he still has one of the lowest ERAs ever against another team's opponent, facing a minimum of 10 times. Some crazy number. He has I think it might be a below a 1 ERA against the Giants. But it's difficult because, you know, Kershaw does have so much of the hitting behind him, so much money behind him, and yet he still is not able to pull through. Maybe that's the reason, you know, maybe the ability to become a clubhouse. Maybe Bumgarner is just such a, you know, low profile, quiet guy. I mean, you saw him last night on Jimmy Fallon. He, you know, he's not a big talker. He had those funny mad bum boxers, but that's because those were promoted by Jockey. He didn't have any real say in that. They just asked him to use it, and he's of course just making some more money. But I mean, he's just such a guy that's a clubhouse. He's gonna, you know, never do anything out of ordinary, out of crazy. You know, in the beginning when he was first starting, he said after his first contract he wanted to retire, own a ranch up in North Carolina where he's from, and live off the fat of the land. I mean, this guy's as simple as it comes. I mean, they only have about 80,000 people in his hometown, and they all love him. They even put up a big billboard of him, says the Madison Bumgarner World Series MVP, and then it has a big Giants logo. It's cool. I mean, this is a guy that everyone likes. I mean, he's never been negative in public. He's never gone after the media. He's never turned down the media. He never shows his real anger. I mean, he had a couple bad starts this year, but you never saw him, you know, be some Jake Peavy type where he just blows up and starts yelling at an umpire or anything like that. No, he's so cool, calm, and collective. And that's what a number one starter should be. And he is only 25, and he is just going to get better and better. And he's going to learn, you know, the different, you know, nuances of the game. You know, every year he's going to pick up something new. Maybe he's going to start throwing different pitches and pick up different pitches from other pitchers in the league he sees. You know, he's also going to see more of the batters and hitters. You know, you kind of develop a rapport against them. So, you know, again, he's developing more and more, and he's only 25. There's so much he can do. I'll go back to the game we won, game 7. Great game. A little scare at the end with Gregor Blanco misplaying that, which should have been just a routine single and kept him at first, but the ball got by him. He went to second, went to third. I saw Juan Perez with a little bobble, and then my eyes got big, and I fell straight to the floor praying that he wasn't going to go home and challenge the throw from Crawford, because I don't know. Crawford had to pick that ball up. It was a one hop. He picked it kind of clean, you know. He was still, you know, good 15, 20 feet into the outfield. It would have been a bang-bang play if they sent him in. You know, at that time, I don't know if I would send him or a third base coach should send him, because you really, you don't want to make that last out at home. You really want to give a chance for somebody else, especially Perez, who was, you know, he hit a home run in game 1 off of Madison. You know, he's had some good at-bats through the series. He was hitting real well. So you give him a shot. And they did, and thank God they did, because he fouled out to Pablo, and, you know, Pablo fell to the ground after he caught it, and then Posey came out and put his head right into Bumgarner's chest and just said, "Hold me, I am tired, please hold me." I think it could have been both ways around. I think both of them were real tired from this whole postseason and regular season. And, you know, now it's time for them to take a rest, you know, hopefully not too much off-season work, and get healthy for the next season. You know, I don't want it to be every other year. I like it. I want to get to the playoffs next year. I don't want to be some dud team. I don't want to, you know, just miss the playoffs to the Dodgers again. I want to be in it again, because once we get in it, we can do anything. We really can. We can do what we want and how we want it. You know, Bochy is a playoff genius. Now he's for sure a Hall of Fame bound, 3 championships. He also is up for NL Coach of the Year with the Nationals coach Matt Williams, and with who was the other coach? The other coach was the Pittsburgh Pirates coach, and I think it's going to go to Matt Williams, because they had such, you know, this is his first time coaching, and it's such a great regular season. All these votes are done before the playoffs even start, so they don't include any of the playoffs. It's all individual awards. Yesterday, also, the Gold Gloves were given out. The Giants, no Giants players got them. Pablo was the only one up really for consideration, and Nolan Arenado of the Colorado Rockies took that away, or didn't take it. He was voted for, and Pablo got second. It was interesting, you know, as a hometown person, of course you want Pablo to get it. Again, I don't know if Pablo really cares about getting it. I think what he, at this moment, really is enjoying is another ring, and probably going to get paid a ton of money that hopefully the Giants can come through. But I'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, I mean, the Gold Gloves are great individual awards, the most individual award you really can get. Because it's all about your defense, your defensive percentage, how many errors you make. And then they have this stat called plays made to save runs. I forget the breakdown or what the abbreviation for it was. But Pablo was number one on the list by 5 to 10 plays, which is a huge number in that category. Which is, I think, is probably the most important category, is defensive plays to save runs. And then, you have the errors. And Pablo had a good amount of errors. So did Nolan Arenado. But, you know, he probably showed some great plays, you know, also. Maybe gets a little more respect from being on not as great as a team. And Pablo is, you know, is kind of, he's not looked as a great third baseman because of his weight. He's so heavy. He looks heavier than I think people really understand. He's just a big person, but he's so light on his feet and so agile that he should have, you know, been more of a candidate to win it. But that's just me being a hometown fan. So after the game, we win. After the game, of course, we go out to party and celebrate. And we're spraying champagne everywhere in the street. Everyone is doing the same. And I live pretty far from Mission. I live around a mile and a half walk. So we decide, all right, what the heck? Let's go do it. Let's go walk. So we walk and we walk. And I mean, everywhere we're going, people are giving you high fives. People are giving you beers and dumping out, champagne all over the place, yelling, screaming. We're screaming back at them. You know, it's all great fun. And then we get down to the Mission. And that's where the craziness becomes, you know. You go down there and there's huge mobs. All these streets are blocked off. People are drinking and running around screaming Giants flags in the air. People are just really partying. I mean, it's just such a celebration, just such a relief, because we have all this tension for this month of the Giants baseball. It's so torturous, you know. Every game they play with your emotions. They go up, they go down, you know. They never leave you at a constant. And it's just so stressful. And we go out, and this was just like the relief. I mean, a lot of people took it way, way too far. I mean, people burning couches and burning things. What are you doing? Why do you have to do that? And vandalizing. Again, those are not Giants fans. Those are people who are just out there to party and, you know, be with the group mentality, like the mob mentality. And it's just ridiculous. They have the standoff with the riot police. You know, people are throwing bottles at the... It's just, guys, are you kidding? We just won. Why cause this such a grief for the city? We should be rejoicing together. We should be having fun together. But, you know, it's a situation that you have to deal with, because at any time, you know, all people always are saying, oh, I can't believe they did that. I can't believe San Francisco did that. Anytime they win a anybody who wins a championship, that happens. Go to Boston in 07. That was mayhem. Boston 07 was crazy. People were getting, I think 10 people died 07. I mean, yes, we did have 2 people shot, 2 people stabbed. But again, it's just, that's what happens when you're in a big city. You know, people party and then people overdo it. And it's just a part of the society, which is not a good thing at all. But it happens. You know, but if the Niners ever won the Super Bowl, it'd be 10 times crazier, because this is definitely a football city. People are here crazy about the Niners. Even though the Giants have won 3 and 5, still people are more fanatical about the Niners. Definitely. Without a doubt. It might be different in 5 to 10 years if the Giants do more. I mean, the Niners moved out of San Francisco, so maybe the city will become more of a Giants town. And I mean, it's pretty Giants-y right now, but always could have a little more. Yeah, we went down there. It was crazy. We had a friend have a car down there. She parked on the street, and we couldn't get to the car for an hour because it was right in the middle of the riot, you know, parked on the side. The cops, we could see the car right behind the cop where he's standing. He wouldn't let us get to it because all the clothes, all the streets were closed, and it was just hectic. I mean, everywhere you walk, it was like a crunch, crunch. You're walking on glass, crunch, crunch, walking on more glass. So it's a very crazy situation. It's something I've never experienced before because the last two times the Giants won, I was down at the University of Arizona in Tucson, and me and a couple friends were the only ones screaming and partying that night because down there they're all Diamondback fans, the disgusting Diamondbacks, as I used to call them. But, you know, it wasn't as enjoyable this time. It was just nuts. I wanted to get the full experience. I wanted every aspect of winning a championship in your own city. So I really wanted to get the fullest out of it. So, of course, I did all the partying. I went to where I knew it would be the craziest. And I must say I had one of the greatest times of my life. And then 2 days later, that was Wednesday. Tuesday later, on Friday, it was time for the best thing to happen, the parade, something I've been dreaming about going to for so long. When I was in Arizona, you know, they have it on MLB TV. You can watch the whole parade, and I watched every single minute of that parade. And this year I was finally able to go. I was so excited. If you listen to Penguin Press Passes on Fridays between 12:15 and 1, you could hear I was doing live reporting. I was there. I was at the Civic Center for summertime, and then I also was on McAllister. It was great. You just saw all these big two-decker buses. A funny thing, Jeremy Affeldt's bus broke down. I think it might not have had gas or something in it, but it was very interesting and funny because everyone was, "Where's Jeremy? Where's Jeremy?" And all the other cars were packed. All the other trucks had to like squeeze by them. I mean, it was crazy packed. A market, they have small sidewalks, probably 8 feet. 8 people in length can fit on it, and they were packing 12, 15, 20 people. You know, people were on people's shoulders, and it started to rain. In the beginning when I got there around 11:30, it was just pouring, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, what is going on?" All these umbrellas popped up, then I was yelling because I couldn't see, you know. So, and then we continue on. We see part of the parade, and then of course, I want to get to the Civic Center. I want to see the speeches. I want to see Buster. I want to see Bumgarner. I want to see what Hunter Pence is going to say. So then we go and we find our spot. I mean, this place was in a haze, all foggy and grainy and cold. A lot of drunk people out on the field of the Civic Center. But it was a great time. We heard everyone. My legs were exhausted. I was standing there for 6+ hours, you know, waiting for it to come. They're 2 hours late. So it was enjoyable, very, very enjoyable. I think Hunter Pence gave the best speech of the night. He would go around and say, "Brandon Crawford's hair." And everyone in the crowd would say, "Yes, yes, yes." He, you know, his yes, yes movement is from a pro wrestler. Every time they do something good, hit a home run, they do a yes, yes, yes in the dugout. So he went through 6 or 7 categories. One of them was Pay Pablo. Yes, yes, yes. A lot of Pablo contracts was talked about during the ceremony. Bochy talked about it. Sabian was even, "Larry Bear, you have any extra cash for me so we can pay this man right here, Pablo?" You know, Buster said something, Hunter said something. So you know, it's a team thing. Now it's up to Panda, it's up to Pablo to make his decision, because he's gonna get some outstanding offers. He's gonna get 100+ million from some team. You know, the Giants might match it, or might come close to it, and that's his decision. His decision is, do I want to take a hometown discount and play with a team that has supported me and brought me up through the ranks, or do I try something new and go to the American League? Maybe I don't play as much third base. Maybe I become a DH, extend my career. Or do I just take as much money as I possibly can? So those are all options Pablo has to come with. But, you know, it's an interesting situation for him, because, you know, this is his first time ever hitting free agency. He turned down an offer that we gave him today, which is $15.5 million for 1 year. Him turning down this means not much. We knew he would turn this down. He's going to get so much more, especially as a baseball player, you want years. You know, you don't want a short-term contract. You want years because, again, it's such a long season. You never know what happens. It's all guaranteed money. So the longer it is, the better it is, the more stability you have as a player. Because if you have short-term contract and you have one bad year, it's sports are what have you done for me now kinds of leagues. And, you know, you won't get those huge contracts like you could when you're coming off a great year. And winning a World Series really gives your price tag a nice little jump up. And how he was hitting 400-plus in the World Series. He's a 400-plus hitter in the World Series ever. So, I mean, he's just a stud. Had the most hits in a World Series or in a postseason ever. And, you know, those are all kind of things other teams want to bring to their team so that they can, you know, make a run. That is what you want. You want somebody who has championships that has been there before, because then you have playoff experience. You know, he can help the younger players. But the truth is, I think that it's a must for him to come back. I don't care about Michael Morse. Jake Peavy, it's okay if he wants to go. He's going to cost too much. But Pablo, we have to sign, and then we have to make another move. We have to get another starting pitcher. I was hearing on the radio KMBR today, you know what? Maybe Larry Bird goes, let's blow the roof off this salary or of our cap of that we put on ourselves, and let's go maybe get Scherzer and Pablo. Maybe we'll go get some big name free agent, or maybe we'll do a sign and trade and sign Pablo and trade him for Cespedes and for Boston, because Boston has such interest in Panda. So there's just so many things. I love baseball, but one of my favorite parts is the hot stove. All these free agent rumors flying around. I love reading all about the different rumors and how what teams think of who trades, and then you get to the winter meetings. Oh man, it's just such great rumor mill stuff. And we can talk about other people that are up for free agency. You know, you got Romo. You got Vogie, we can re-sign. I don't know if we're going to. I think we're probably the only team that's going to give him a decent size contract because of our loyalty to him. Romo, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Romo because he is from SoCal. He does have so many Dodger fans in his family. You know, he was born down there. I mean, that definitely would be a fit for him, and I really hope he doesn't, because I hate Giants that go down to the Dodgers. You know, one of my favorite Giants of all time, Schmidt, decides to go down there, and then he started to suck. So then I really started to like him. You know, any player that goes down there, Juan Uribe really kills me every time I see him. I used to miss yelling Uribe in the stands. You know, it's difficult when a player that you've rooted for so long goes to your rival team, the team that you've hated your whole life. You know, it's just not a great situation. You got to turn your back onto somebody that you've rooted for so long, and that's a drag. You know, you don't want to be, you know, turn your faith on somebody so quickly, because it can be one day he's a Giant, the next day he's a Dodger. And it really sucks. It really does. Jason Schmidt was, you know, when we were not that great, Jason Schmidt was the man. He was our everything. He was our ace. He did everything well for us. And then he left, and it was just like a cringe moment. And then when Brian Wilson signed, I wasn't that sad. I really wasn't. That's because I thought Brian Wilson was done. His arm was toast. His two surgeries already. You know, his velocity was already coming down. Romo really dominated in that closer role, and it really showed. It really showed this year how weak Brian Wilson was. He wasn't even a setup guy. He was probably maybe a sixth inning guy, and he really did blow and have a high ERA. And that's why the Dodgers did not do so well. First of all, let me say that is you have to have a good bullpen to make it through the playoffs, because, you know, starting pitcher gets roughed around in the playoffs, and you have no time to lose, no time to keep them out there while they're struggling. You have to bring in the bullpen, and Brian Wilson is getting paid $14.5 million next year. He had a player option for $14.5 million, and of course he's going to take it. He's not going to get anywhere close to any of that from any other team. So the Dodgers are paying overpaying for Sonny. They still have Jansen, who's an absolute stud as a reliever, as a closer, but they don't really have anyone else to really, you know, hold down that bullpen. So right now I'm going to be going to a break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk a little Warriors basketball. Go on, maybe talk about Niners after that. But I think the Warriors have something special going on, and I'm going to explain why after this break.
Hey guys, Harley D here with your 3-minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. Eva Lenfest of Maine made an almost life-ending mistake last week while driving. The 92-year-old woman mistakenly took a boat launch ramp for a road. Officials said that both the ramp and the surface of the water were covered in a layer of leaves, and Lenfest later said she had thought she was driving on the road. There was also heavy rain that morning, which further decreased visibility. Two men working in the harbor were able to get to the car in a rubber dinghy and pull Lenfest out. She was taken to the hospital, but is reportedly doing fine. A 37-pound house cat in Southern California has drawn national attention for his extreme size. The cat, aptly named Biggie, has been adopted by a Riverside cat hospital after its owners expressed that they could not afford the cat's high vet bills. The owner had initially brought the cat to the hospital after concerns the cat had not made a bowel movement. According to the hospital, Biggie is suffering from severe constipation that could require surgery. Veterinarians are planning to place Biggie on a weight reduction program. The hospital is asking for donations since Biggie's costs have gone up. To donate, visit GoFundMe.com/Biggie. 58-year-old Maria Montanez Colon was arrested this past week for abusing the 911 system in Florida. She allegedly called police with a bogus story that she had given her late husband's convertible to his son while she was drunk and she wanted the car back. When the officer arrived, she tried to have sex with him. Officer Justin DeVolt of the Punta Gorda Police Department arrived at the house and Montanez Colon allegedly fondled him. She allegedly grabbed the cop's arm and tried to rub her hands across his chest. So he told her that her behavior was inappropriate. She replied, "I know, I'm bad." The officer left, but returned a short time later with another officer when the suspect called 911 again. Montanez Colon was immediately booked into Charlotte County Jail. A 39-year-old woman in southwestern Michigan was arrested early Sunday morning at the Van Buren County Jail. She had apparently mistaken the jail parking lot for the Pawpaw Bar where she was picking up her boyfriend. The county police spotted the woman backing into the parking lot around 2 a.m. They smelled alcohol and noticed she appeared intoxicated. A breath test showed she was more than twice the legal limit. I'm Harley D signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
The summer breeze, didn't know when we'd be back in. Didn't think we'd end up like lying here.
And welcome back to Banter by the Bay. Let's get on to this Warriors topic now. I am really, really excited about what this season might be. They've come out and shown how the offense is different. You know, the backup bench players, the rotations are different. You know, Mark Jackson was all about five players here, five players there. Give our first team a lot of rest. Don't really intermingle the two. And I really thought that was the wrong idea, especially in key parts of the game, you know, late third quarter, early fourth. You know, those are big, big moments in games. Those can turn games, you know, to the positive or the negative. And I think this year we can see a whole different attitude towards it. You see, maybe if the bench is not doing so well, we throw in a couple starters because our bench is so deep. We have, you know, Sean Livingston just getting healthy. He played all right for a couple of games. He's so long and lanky at the two guard or even at the point guard. We have the Brazilian Flash, Barbosa, who's, you know, as he did against Portland, we needed points from our bench squad, and he put up 9 quick points. You know, that's what he does. He's a bench player, bench scorer. And, you know, we never had that last year when we had Jamal, we had Crawford, who would take some crazy shots. You know, sometimes he'd heat up. But Barbosa is a consistent scorer. You know, he's done it his whole career. This is his 10th plus year of playing in the NBA. You know, he's definitely a veteran leader out there. And there's also, you know, we get Festus Ezeli back, which is a huge boost to our starters, because now we have somebody who can back up Bogut. You know, Bogut doesn't have to be their only defensive stopping center. We have Ezeli, who had some beautiful blocks against Portland, some big rejections, some nice offensive move, which, you know, really, really surprised me. You know, he got back down the lane, did his nice little one-hand floater, little hook shot. Something we've never ever seen before from a big guy like that. It's not since Eric Dampier back in the day. Way back, we used to feed him the ball 20 times a game and hopefully have him score. But that was before we had a run and gun offense. Steve Kerr really shows how to utilize Clay and Curry in different ways. You know, you have Harrison Barnes take down the ball and have them two run off the wings, and, you know, you have two spot up shooters, or then they can drive. As you've seen what Clay has been doing, last couple of years he's been more of, you know, come around a pick and take that quick pop or hit a three or, you know, move off a screen. But now we see him dribbling into the hole. And against Portland in the fourth quarter, we saw a dominating move with he got around Steve Blake easily, elevated over Robin Lopez, and absolutely brought the thunder on him. It was as Tim Roy says, the Warriors play-by-play on the radio, he says, that was savage. Yes, that was absolutely savage. He was a very, very, you know, out of the ordinary play for Clay. I mean, we saw him do it last year against the Clippers in the playoffs, where he elevated over two hands Blake. But, you know, again, you don't expect that explosion out of him, but at this point of the year, he's been so great. He's been getting to the rim. He's been flying around the rim. He's been grabbing boards, taking it coast to coast. I mean, he's definitely gotten some kind of confidence in his dribbling game, because there has been a complete difference. And I think that really, really contributes to the FIBA World Championships. You know, he's playing with the best players for a month. He's practicing every day against them. He plays alongside them. And then he realized, I'm that good. I don't think he realized how good he was or how good he could be until he played up against these guys and saw, these are the best players I play with. I'm on their level. And Curry's had that feeling since he came in this league and just torched everyone and shot his three. I mean, he's become better in every aspect of his game. And each aspect of their game is, you know, so important. And Curry was not a huge defensive stopper, and this year they said that their offseason he was definitely working hard on it. And it's already showed. He had 2 steals in the final minute of that Portland game to win it. And, you know, without him making those steals, it could have been a lot different game. They could have hit a game winner. He gave them no opportunity. Again, it's this first 3 games. You know, I'm real excited. 3-0. I've always been a huge Warriors fan. Had Warriors season tickets when I was a kid. Would go to like 20 games a year with my dad. You know, and that was back when they were just so terrible. And you would go because, you know, I loved basketball. And as a fan of basketball, you always want to see the top players. But now, I don't care about who we play. I just want to see our team, and it's just such a different mentality. You know, we can have a perennial good team, and people are enjoying watching our basketball, and people are not, who are the Warriors? It used to be, who are the Warriors? I mean, I've traveled around the world. I've been to China. You know, they only knew six teams, the Heat, the Pacers. They loved the Houston Rockets for Yao Ming, and they loved Tracy McGrady. I don't know why, but they all loved Tracy McGrady. They all were, you know who Tracy McGrady is? Yeah, I know. He's an old player now. But they don't even know who the Warriors are. And now I've been getting from people I've stayed in contact with there. Now I really hear all of them. They all love Curry and Thompson. So, you know, now we're getting these superstars that we never really had. I mean, our last All-Star before Curry and Lee was Latrell Sprewell in the 90s, which was so long ago. I mean, before I really became a huge, huge Warriors fan. And then what did Latrell do? Punch our coach. So, you know. That was our one All-Star, and that was what we were known for so many years. You know, people were always talking about Run DMC. You know, they were back in the 70s. That was so long ago, and they are still talking about it like it was yesterday. At least now we have something new to talk about, something different. I would like to touch on a topic maybe that might be a little controversial. I would like to get rid of David Lee. I am a David Lee hater, a big-time David Lee hater, and this is why. I think that our team is based around defense. As we saw last year, our offensive proficiency was ranked 15th in the league. And our defense proficiency last year was ranked 4th in the league. And that's how we won game. We weren't a huge offensive powerhouse. And that's mostly because David Lee's clogging up the lane and taking a lot of shots that he shouldn't be taking or making bad mistakes. I mean, it was just so easy to tell against the Clippers. I mean, every time he got the ball, they were so happy because they knew he would take some hard contested shot or make a big mistake or try to put the ball on the ground and get it taken away. So this is my theory. I think that the Warriors have found a way to win, and this is defensive basketball. Use our defense to create our offense. And with Draymond Green at the four, I mean, he might be undersized, but he is just an incredible basketball mind. He knows what's coming next. He knows how to play. He knows how to work the court. He knows how to spread, and he knows how to play defense. He can guard 1 through 4. He's guarded Chris Paul before. He's guarded LeBron before. As I said last week, you know, he had 2 years ago, his rookie, he guarded LeBron in the game we won down in Miami where he scored the game-winning layup. He's just around better. And again, as he learns how to play and he learns different tendencies of players, he's just going to get better. This, again, his third year, and he's just exponentially grown in his offense and defense skills since he came in here. You know, originally when he came in, I thought he'd be, you know, eighth man off the bench. And now I am definitely for him starting. I think, you know, we have so many issues going into next year about salary cap and stuff like that. And it drives me nuts that we pay him so much. You know, we need a third scorer, but I think what we have off the bench can definitely be a third potential scorer and third potential, because you can't just rely all on Curry and Clay, and that's what they really are thinking. They want David Lee to be that big 20-point third scorer, but if he's going to be a volume shooter, and then if he's not a volume shooter, he's going to lose it on the. I mean, there's no way he guards Aldridge great. There's no way that he can play Blake Griffin like Draymond, because he's not physical enough. He's not physically gifted enough to be a defender against these absolute freaks on offense. And Draymond is. Draymond is a man who understands how to play defense, understands the leverages, understands how to jump, his timing. I mean, he's not as athletic as most players, but he's just as good or maybe even better at the mental side of the game, which is a huge aspect of any sport, is the mental side, is what play is coming up next, how do I defend this, what happens if this guy comes, picks me on the left, do I go under, do I go over? There's just so many different aspects to this game. So I really think Draymond will have a career because of his intelligence. He reminds me of a little smaller Zebo. He definitely is has that thick. He can't jump high, but he's able to read the rebounds off the rim. You know, it's an exciting time. Let's touch on Curry. Let's see. Is Curry the top three point guard in the league? At this moment, I think he is. I mean, you put Chris Paul there. You put Derrick Rose there. I mean, Westbrook right now is, you know, he's hurt. He's not all there. So he's definitely not up there. Lillard, I still think Curry has, you know, a better shot. You can see Curry is more of a field general. He's able to run offenses. He's able to absolutely break you down on the dribble. It is amazing. I think he's going to lose the ball every time. It's going to slip out. But somehow he gets people on skates, and they're moving all over the place, and people are not able to get in front of him and stop him. He can get by you, or if he doesn't get by you, if he gets you a little psyched out, he can then pop it over you. There's just so many different things he can do. And he just keeps getting better at it. I mean, the more and more offseason time he has, I mean, this guy is a hard worker. Again, as I said before about Bumgarner, you don't see him in the media with negative, you know, connotations going out against him. You don't see any negative publicity in the news. You don't see anything like that. He's a baby-faced three-point shooter who has a great dad who taught him the fundamentals of basketball. It is exciting to see the progress of this player. I mean, you remember when he was first coming in the league, it was him and Monte playing. Monte was, you know, taking all the shots. Curry was not very used much. And then at the end of the season, when we knew we were kind of getting away from Monte, you know, Curry stepped in, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, this guy can shoot lights out!" And then he got his first year of really, this team is yours. You know, David Lee was there, but Clay wasn't there yet. Or Clay was actually a rookie; he wasn't proving anything yet. So that was Curry's team, and Curry just showed him that he could do it. That he's not small, he's not fragile. Early in his career, he was the fragile one with all the ankle injuries. But I mean, this man has worked his ass off to play extremely hard and to be in great shape like he is. We're going to be going to another break right now, and after this break, we are going to talk a very depressing topic next. We're going to talk Niners football and how they're going to turn it around, and how Cap needs to play better, and how Harbaugh needs to call better plays. So after this, we will talk about those dreaded Niners right now. A few browns, tight pants, points, hollering
out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes. Hey guys, Harley D here with your 3-minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. Could you spend a night in a hotel that left you tied up, covered in snakes and drenched in blood? It's a question that an amazing 24,000 people are eager to answer as they wait to try to spend one night in McCarney Manor in San Diego, California. The manor has the honor of being named the world's scariest hotel. Visitors travel between four terrifying locations and often find themselves trapped in cages, tied to chairs, and sprayed with blood. Visits to the manor are filmed so spectators can watch on global webcams as visitors try to attempt and survive up to 8 hours in the hotel. It is a challenge that so far no one has ever completed. Pennsylvania State Police say they're looking for a man pretending he's Pittsburgh's District Attorney, Stephen Zappala, to steal beer, pizza, and other goods. They say his story at one business involved telling embarrassed employees they hadn't given him all the products he purchased. Police say the fake Zappala drives a car that looks like an unmarked police vehicle and got away with $40 worth of pizza and a case of beer. Felony charges are pending against 18-year-old Benjamin Hawkins after police discovered 500 pairs of stolen panties along with firearms in his bedroom. He was arrested last Tuesday, at which time cops found 5 pairs of underwear shoved down his pants. In Minnesota this past weekend, 24-year-old Riley Luis Swearingen pled guilty to disruptive intoxication. According to the criminal complaint, Mankato Department of Public Safety Police Sergeant Adam Gray was talking with a driver of a party bus in the city's entertainment district when he felt 2 fingertips that were obvious to him as wet with saliva being pushed into his right and left ear canals, which caused pressure and discomfort in his ear. The officer turned and saw a man later identified as the suspect. He is facing charges including assaulting a police officer with bodily fluids. A New York State man was sentenced to 2 years in jail after accidentally texting his probation officer a message seeking marijuana. Prosecutors said Alvin Cross Jr. of Albany sent his probation officer a text message reading, "You got some weed?" Authorities responded by raiding Cross's home and seizing a bag of cocaine. Cross pleaded guilty to cocaine possession Monday and was sentenced to 1 year in prison. An extra year was added to the sentence for violating his probation. I'm Harley D. signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
Strange how the night moves. With autumn closing in.
And welcome back. We're here with the last segment of my show. And I've been dreading this segment the whole day. I've been thinking, oh man, how am I going to talk about this? How am I going to be, you know, positive about this Niner situation? It's so hard for me, you know. I just want to love Cap. I just want to, you know, put my whole, you know, reputation on defending him and saying how good he can be. But I just have such a hard time doing it. You want him to do so well, but, you know, he makes mistakes like that fumble or, you know, not seeing the coverage and almost throwing an interception. He probably has the most almost interception thrown balls. He at least has 2 to 3 a game. You know, he just throws it so hard that most quarterbacks are not even close to using to catch a ball at that mile per outage. But he literally hits DB's hands 3 or 4 times a game. And, you know, like, those will cost us later on. And it's just hard for me to be ecstatic about this team because we were supposed to have this great offense, and yet nothing has come of it. It's actually been the worst offense. We've had, you know, our wide receivers. You have to have Bolden. You have to have Stevie Johnson. You have to have Crabtree all spread out. You have to throw it to each one of them. And then you have Brandon Lloyd, who's also another veteran receiver. All these guys want the ball, and that is not our thing. That is not what we are based on. In the last 3 years, we've done so well, and what is that based off? Pounding the rock, and then that opens the passing game right there. Our offensive linemen, Upati, Anthony Davis, Joe Staley, those are not pass-blocking type of linemen. Those are run-blocking. Those are let's go head-to-head, and let's see who can drive who farther. And that's how we win. We have Frank Gore back there becoming small, finding those little gaps, hitting the holes hard, and that opens up the offense. That makes them bring in the 8-9 men into the box, and then you have one-on-one matchups on the outside, and then you can play around with your wide receivers. I just think that Greg Roman and Harbaugh are trying to manipulate our offense to become something that we're not, to try to become more of a high passing attack like you've seen it become so popular in the NFL now. You see the Peyton Mannings, the Drew Breeses, the Tom Brady's, and that's what they do. They've always been built like that. They've all never been a run-first team. Brady, when he first started, might have been a run-first, but, you know, he adapted and learned how to play in a different style. I think Cap doesn't understand the difference of reading a defense compared to that one option read where it's off a play action and you have one read that's right in front of you short, one read that's mid, and then one deep ball. So now he has to sit back and he has to read the zone defense. And that can be very complicated, especially in the NFL when they have so many fake blitzers and so much fast linebackers who can cover so much yardage so quickly that they can drop into deep zones even if they're at the line of scrimmage. So he's just not used to it, and if his first read's not open, he doesn't keep his eyes up and look downfield. He puts his head down and looks to the left, always to the left. I don't know why. He always drops his head, looks to the left, and tries to make a play out wide. And teams have saw that. They cover that one receiver, and the defensive linemen know they have him. You know, he puts his head down. Once they see his crown of his helmet, they know it's all out, go for him, because that's all he's doing is putting his head down and running. You know, he rarely makes that out of pocket, slip a sack, make a throw down the field. I mean, you see it every once in a while, and when he does, it's absolutely fantastic, and he's so great at it. But it's such a rare thing, and you don't see a Russell Wilson taking 8 sacks a game. Russell Wilson is so proficient in a way that he won't take the sack and he'll get the ball away. You know what? Who cares if you throw the ball away? You save me 8 yards. Cap did it twice on Sunday where we lost enough yards that we got out of field goal range. And, of course, you know, that 55-yard field goal, what happened? He got sacked right before that play. So, I mean, you could put all this onto Cap, yes, but I think it also needs to put on Harbaugh and Greg Roman. Those are the two that's calling the offensive plays. Harbaugh does nothing really for the special teams or the defense. The defense is all Vic Fangio, and he should win Defensive Coordinator of the Year. He's done unbelievable. He led up St. Louis to only 13 points, and we didn't have Patrick, no Navarro, no Alden. And we still played one heck of a game. I think we only let up 190 yards. But our offense did nothing. How could we win if our defense holds them to low points and we can't even score against the St. Louis Rams? The St. Louis Rams came into the game with 6 sacks, and then they had 8 sacks against the Niners. That's just something's messed up. Something's wrong. That's not how we play. That's because we're not running the ball. That's not who we're showing our true identity. All right, let's get back to the Harbaugh and Roman thing. So this is why I'm putting it all on them. Greg Roman calls a play. The play goes down to Harbaugh. Then Harbaugh decides either if he wants to go with that play or if he wants to go with another play and send it into Cap. So that decision takes a couple seconds. Those couple seconds come off the play clock. And then we get the play in at round 16-15 on the play clock. He calls it. And now he's already behind. He has to rush the play. He can't look at the coverage as long as, you know, most players. You see all this fast-paced offense. You see the Eagles. You see the Colts. They get the play in so quickly that the quarterback can sit there and look at the defense and really, really analyze on how the coverage might be, you know, where the linebackers might drop, move some people in motion, see if they're playing man, see if they're having zone. You know, there's just so many different ways. Move a tight end over, switch the strength of the side. You know, there's just so many different aspects of the game that we lose by having the play called in so late. The later it is, there's less time. The more we have to rush, the more times we have to call timeout. I mean, Niners are famous for that. How many times we call a timeout in the second half before the fourth quarter when we need them? You know, maybe the play comes in too late. You know, we have to waste a timeout, burn a timeout there. It's just poop. It just sucks. It really does suck. And as a fan, it's so, so devastating, especially when your team is just supposed to be this perennial powerhouse, supposed to be, you know, first or second in division to Seattle, and we've lost to Arizona and St. Louis already. So it's devastating. It really is devastating. I just want to touch on that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady game. A battle for the ages. It shows you how good both players are. You know, Tom Brady definitely had an extreme performance. He showed how he is not aged and he still has the ability to put up some big numbers. I mean, this month he's put up some crazy, crazy numbers. I got Gronk on my fantasy team. I'm loving that right now. He's finally proven something. Finally looks like he's 100% healthy and ready to go. Edelman is showing well, too. And then you got Peyton Manning, who's, you know, had a great game. But, you know, it's those big games in outdoors where he really struggles. Really struggles. Those big games. You know, let's see how it goes again. I mean, we all know Peyton has his playoff moments. He's only won one Super Bowl. He's been in the playoffs almost nine times. And that's just not a good percentage. I mean, he's not the Dan Marino level, because Dan Marino never got one. But he got one. He got one. And, you know, it really wasn't all of him. I think it was he had one of the great defense at that time. I think people really forget how good Indianapolis' defense was at that time. They had Bob Sanders at safety, his only year truly healthy at the prime of his career, and he was just flying around. He was the best safety of that league by far. He was just picks and everything like that. And then you had, you know, Dwight Freeney and Mathis down there at their prime. And they were a shutdown team. They really were. They were a great defense. And then you had Peyton Manning on the offense and Marvin Harrison and, you know, Dallas Clark, if you remember who that is. It's funny. They're great role players. Peyton definitely made them who they are. And you can see that. You can see Decker in New York right now. He's really nothing. But Manning was definitely the man who put them on. You know, it's interesting. You know, quarterbacks, you know, you compare him to pitchers in the World Series. You know, you show studs, you show Kershaw, somebody maybe who is not a great postseason pitcher. Maybe we'll see in the future. Maybe he is. But as so far, he has not proved much. I mean, Payton is on that kind of same level. I mean, obviously Payton has more experience in the playoffs. And it's also football, where I think it's a very different game. But let's get back to the Niners. So we are facing New Orleans this week in New Orleans, and it's going to be a rough game. If Patrick Willis is already ruled out, Alden Smith is not getting his sentence shortened, so he will not be there. We have to somehow find pressure all day long on Drew Brees. And that's one thing we're really, really not good on. We're really not good at putting pressure on the quarterback with our four-man rush. We really need a boost, and you know, Aaron Lynch has become more of our defensive end. There was also rumors this week that Ahmad Brooks was going to get traded to Cleveland. That fell through, and then Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, came out and said, "I never heard any of these." And really defending his player and really defending his front office, trying to make the situation a little better. I mean, all of our situations have become wrong because we wanted to trade somebody to Cleveland. At first, it was Harbaugh. Now it's Ahmad Brooks. Ahmad Brooks has not had a good year, first of all, at all. That's because they said he came into camp overweight, and they said he still has not lost the weight. And he gets about 5 flags a game for either defense offsides, infractions, or hands to the face. I mean, he got called the first game of the season 4 times for hands to the face. Don't you learn after that? It's stop. Stop putting your hands under their face and pushing their head back. That's just not how you play football anymore. I mean, they're trying to cut this down. And you got to obey the rules, because if you don't, you're just hurting your team. And he gives away first downs. It's just frustrating. Frustrating, frustrating. But let's see how our offense plays against the defense of New Orleans. I think you just got to pound the ball. I think you really they do not have a strong defense. They got a decent secondary, but not a great defensive line. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to pound the ball, pound the ball. All right, this is the end of my show. I just want to thank you all for listening to me. This is DJ Bus Stop on Banter by the Bay. Please listen to me every Wednesday from 6 to 7 on radio.dominican.edu. I will be here next week, and have a good time. Mike, the House of Swan is up next, and they will be simulcasting their radio show live, so stay tuned for that. Thank you, and good night.